Welcome back to What Do I Know with me, Joanne Pei, and a very happy International Women's Day to all the women out there. In the second part of this special International Women's Day series that I'm bringing you, I want to celebrate our wonderful bodies and touch on a topic that I'm honestly a little bit uncomfortable talking about, but I know I have to because, as you know, this podcast is all about getting out of my comfort zone and talking about topics that you don't normally hear about in the mainstream media. So, today is going to be about vulvas and vaginas. Okay, there. I got the V word out. Dr. Martha Lee is a relationship counselor and clinical sexologist who conducts relationship and sexuality coaching, as well as sexuality education events in Asia. She's also the host of a weekly radio show, Eros Evolution. She's also written a few books, Love, Sex, and Everything in Between, Orgasmic Yoga, Masturbation, Meditation, and Everything in Between, as well as a banned book that she's going to be talking about in a while. Okay, I think that's enough foreplay for now. Let's dive right into the conversation. Hi, Dr. Lee.
Hello.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much for coming on the show. First question I have.
Yes.
Are we all having enough sex?
No, definitely not. Try to have some tonight.
Do you actually have statistics to back that up?
Yes. So a lot of people would like to have more sex than they actually are because they are busy, they're tired. Mm. And a lot of couples are actually having sex about every 10 days or so.
Mm-hmm. Yes. So maybe before we go in any further, we should probably talk about like what is it that you do?
Yes.
And of course, like why? Why do you choose to like major in this area?
I work with individuals and couples with all kinds of relationship sexuality challenges. So yes, relationship, but my passion is really sex. I think sex is a very important thing that bonds people together.
Mm.
And it just feels amazing. I consider sex the last frontier of being an adult as well. We learn about everything else except sex.
Yes.
I feel.
Yes, yes.
And it's also a rite of passage. You just feel different after you've had sex for the first time, regardless of what that means. It doesn't have to be penetration. It can just be being intimate by yourself or with someone. I got into it because I got angry that we don't talk about sex in positive ways. We always hear about, don't do this, it is bad for you. But we don't actually hear about it, talked about in positive, meaningful ways. So I thought, since I have so many people that I know of so many people who are inhibited around sex, maybe there should be somebody, or is there somebody that is actually focused on supporting people to have better sex so that they can live their lives fully.
Mm.
So I'm more about living it fully than just being just about sex.
Right. I mean, most of us probably were brought up not talking about it.
Yeah.
So you would never think that it's something that would complete you, or in fact, if you don't talk about it, you might not even think that you need it. Mm-hmm. Do you think we need sex?
I think it's very much a function of our body.
Mm-hmm.
If you have good chi, you have good energy, you have a healthy body, it's quite common to want to express and to have those amorous feelings and feeling horny. And that actually is good because from that energy that comes forth all our great works of poems and art, and we channel it into all these amazing outlets to express ourselves. So I see sex as very much a big part of our vitality, a big part of life, and it gives us our glow.
You know, I'm glad that we're having this conversation because, some people who are listening in might still be relatively young, you know, they may not be aware of this. And, you know, part of me feels like, hey, you know, actually, I wish I knew this earlier. Because I've always been made to think like, hey, sex is no good, you know, and which is why I did in the introduction earlier say that, actually, I'm not very comfortable talking about it, you know, because I think I'm brought up thinking that sex is always a little bit negative. You know, with your premarital sex,
taboo.
It's very taboo, and then you get like unwanted pregnancies.
Yes, and then it's family shame.
Yes, 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 and all these, and then you know we do it in the dramas as well, right? Where
yes,
you know, you
teaching you moral of the story. Yeah. Don't have sex.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So it's like, oh, so we shouldn't talk about it much. But you know, I do have come to realize, especially after giving birth, and now as I. Grow older, and I have also participated in a drama not too long ago called Last Madame, where it actually is a lot about that I've come to realize that, hey, you know, actually this part of us, it's very powerful.
Yes.
And we are not harnessing the power enough.
I know. Can you imagine if we all harness it, we will change the world many times over.
Yeah, but we, that's the thing.
Yeah, and so the governments are trying to control us and tell us, you know, you bad, you shameful, you dirty, filthy thing.
Oh no. You tell me this, I kind of want to ask you a little bit about that banned book that you actually
written. Oh yeah, so tell I have an Asian vulva photo book. It's a photo book of Asian vulvas.
Okay.
And it's banned because it's explicit. Mm. And apparently it will harm children. So I, when the book was released and I asked MDA, is it okay I sell the book in Singapore? I just want to make sure I don't commit any offences. Then of course they tell me no, cannot, it's banned. They made me sign an agreement. I will not sell this book in Singapore. I can sell it outside of Singapore. I can show this book to my clients, but I cannot sell it. So yes, it's a banned book.
What is in the book?
Photographs of vulvas.
How did you collect these photographs?
I got friends and different volunteers because there are vulva books of white people, and sometimes you look at the images, you don't know what ethnicity they are. Mm-hmm. And I had a lot of my Asian clients asking me, how do Asians look down there? And so I said, well, I'll create one.
Wow.
Yeah. So unfortunately, limited viewership.
why did you think it was important for us to kind of know what we look like down there?
Because I have a lot of clients who have vaginismus, which is a condition that happens when the vagina shuts down, making penetration difficult or impossible. So they have a fear of penetration, they have a fear of pain, they have a fear of the unknown. And because of that, they cannot consummate their marriage, they cannot have sex. They think that because of that, it's linked to their inability to fulfill their duties as a spouse. And then how about the link with pregnancy and fertility? And so a lot of them don't know where is the vagina. They don't know whether they look okay. In reality, we all look different, just like our face.
Mm-hmm.
So if a book like that can trigger discussion and normalization and support them in identifying like where's the clit, where's the vagina, I thought that that would be a very meaningful project to do it for my clients. So yeah, it's really taboo because limited edition.
And so now that you mentioned about like vulva, and so actually vulva, vagina, what is the difference?
Yes, so I often say the vulva is whatever you see when you open up your thighs. For people with vulvas, and it includes all the external, the folds, and the vagina is the entrance to the vagina. A lot of people point at the vagina, but actually we're pointing at the entrance to the vagina. So it's where you have penetrative sex, the vagina.
I feel like if you don't study biology in school, you probably really wouldn't know.
Yes, and I didn't
the different
study
names of the of yes. the anatomy. I mean, not just yes. the female anatomy, in fact, the male anatomy as well.
Yes, I didn't study biology in school, so I really missed out on these medical terms. And for a very long time, I didn't even know the correct pronunciation for penis, pennies. I call it pennies. Yes, and I have clients who call it vagina. They call it vagina. Yes, vagina, vagina. So as a sexologist, you cannot laugh at them, right? You have to understand what they are trying to say.
Okay.
So vaginismus, because they are virgins.
Yeah,
so cannot laugh.
Okay. So I guess with your job, a lot of them come to you, I mean, when they have problems.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
So what are, other than what you've just mentioned, what are some of the other common problems that couples face?
Yeah, so despite being such a sex-positive person, yes, I keep seeing people with problems day in, day out. So it can really take a toll on me. Anyway, some of the common ones for people with penises, erectile difficulties, premature ejaculation, delayed ejaculation, for people with vaginas, vaginismus, low sex drive, sexual communication, sex drive incompatibility, they call it, or sex drive discrepancy. And a painful sex is very common. Mm. And I think a lot of clients come in and they just need reassurance and normalization around the awkwardness and difficulties, the aches and pains that they experience when they are having sex, because sex is, after all, a physical exercise. So if you are not used to certain positions, of course, you know, it's uncomfortable. And that can also cause some people to lose their concentration, their focus, and their erection. Putting on a condom can also cause people to lose their erection because we don't put on condoms when we masturbate. Some of the things that I teach, like the little tips and this is like pretty much common sense.
All these people who come in with all these problems, right? Are they actually all psychological problems?
I don't think it's just psychological. It's just like you want to do very well in something, but you don't have the physical endurance because your body is not used to doing it in a different way. It's just like when you're masturbating, your hand is moving and your body is not moving, but during penetration, like, you're expected to do the thrusting and your body is not used to it. So therefore, your body is not strong, your body cannot last very long, and then you blame it all on psychological. So I think there's this psychological aspect for sure, the fear, the anxiety, the stress that we put on ourselves. And it comes from a good place of wanting to do well, right? That's why you even feel stressed about it. Mm. But then there's also the physical aspect of don't know means don't know law, or not strong law, then have to practice, then get stronger.
I suppose for the men who might be listening, if they have concerns, they can also come to someone like you, right? Although I would assume most of them would be a little bit awkward sharing this part of themselves with you.
Yes, they feel very awkward. They feel embarrassed talking to a woman. But I do have clients who also say, if you're not a woman, I won't be coming to you. Because women are assumed to be more empathetic and they would feel even more embarrassed talking to a man. But there are also people who say, what do you know? You don't have a penis. Which is true. I don't have a penis and I'm not going to pretend that I have one. But I have learned a lot from my studies and also from my experience working with people with penises. And I hope to be able to help them because I can't be just supporting women and then, like, you know, not care about their partner and, you know, their life, their relationship at large. And so it's really important from the beginning that I support all genders. Yeah. So some people actually choose to only work with women because if I only work with women, then I don't have to deal with the harassment and the nonsense that I do get. People trying to slide into my DMs.
What do you mean?
It doesn't just happen to celebrities. It's also happening to me.
Okay. Tell me about that.
They try to chat me up lah. I'll get free consult. Okay. Anyway, I don't know what they're trying to do when they say hi.
So you mean you only work with women now?
No, I work with men and women.
You work with both men and women.
Yeah, because I work with both of them, that's why I think I'm the subject of a lot of these.
Right, harassment. Mm. And also with the topic that you're talking about is also open to a lot of that.
Yeah, so because you are sex positive, so they assume you are sexually open to anybody.
Yes. That's that misconception that, I see, that's the reason why people don't talk about it.
Because
it almost invites unnecessary attention. And also it's like a vice, isn't it?
It's like the asking for it. They assume that you're asking for it. So yes, I have had a lot of flick because of it, but I also see that it's very important to keep talking about it because it's not being done enough in our society and there are a lot of people who need help. So if I can find opportunities to showcase my work and to in turn be able to help more people, because I'm a one person operation, I can't afford like advertising and big budgets. I don't have that. So I really cherish every opportunity to help people.
How much is enough?
How much is enough? What? Yeah.
Sex.
Sex. Oh.
You say you're not having enough. You say like most of us are not having enough.
It depends on the person. It depends on the person. Different people have different sex drives. And so I do have younger people that I know of. They say that they used to masturbate 7 times a day. Once a day. I do have people who have told me that they masturbate every day since they were in their teens and now they are 60. So there are people who actually genuinely have a higher sex drive. And it's a great thing that you have a high sex drive, but what do you do about it? I think a lot of people just masturbate that energy out, but actually you can just channel it into your work, into your art, into mastery of crafts and things like that.
Mm.
Because actually it's still energy that can transmute into our best work.
Mm. I mean, make sense? Yeah, masturbation is also seen as something negative.
Yes.
And in fact, I think last season I've spoken also with a digital literacy coach, and we were talking about pornography as well as sex and all that. And there was also mentioned that masturbation does affect your sex life because you are not used to getting close yes. with your partners, right?
Yeah.
In a situation like that, are there yeah. any remedies for yes. it?
So I teach this all the time, because if you have been masturbating and very comfortable being by yourself, sexually expressing yourself, for 10, 20 years before you have a partner or maybe feel that you give yourself permission to have sex, penetrative sex, then what ends up happening is your body doesn't know what to do or how you're supposed to feel. And so I do teach my clients like bridging techniques so that they can simulate what it feels like when they are having penetrative sex with someone. And so their body will feel more comfortable, more relaxed, more confident, stronger. So I think a lot of us blame porn, but in reality, we are not giving people who want to use something else than porn options. Like besides visual stimulation porn, there's also mental stimulation, like fantasy in your head.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's also physical stimulation where you no thinking, no visual, and just really very much focus on being in your body. Mm. Kind of like meditation where you have the thoughts, but you just let the thoughts go.
Mm, so that's what's yeah. in one of your books.
Yes, so
as well.
That's mindful masturbation. Yes, so that's orgasmic yoga. So in orgasmic yoga, I have a combination of teaching them how to play with their breath, sound, movement, touch, intention, pelvic floor squeezes. So basically imagining like your body is like a laboratory or a playground, and you just play with your body, because back then they didn't have TV or WhatsApp. They didn't have all these distractions.
Uh-huh.
So they just play with their body, and then they learn that if I breathe in a certain way, my body will feel a certain way. So why are we not doing that? Because we think everything that is ancient science is like not less valid, but in reality there's so much wisdom in it.
I mean, when I watch the TV series about like the gladiator times and all, actually people are having a lot of sex.
Yes,
and
they were so much more open.
And now that you mention the fact that we have so much more distraction in our lives, right? We spend so much time on the computers, on our phones, that you know, we are distracted. Like you have so much to do, right? You have so much to see. You have so much to learn, for example, that you don't have time to have sex anymore.
Yes, and then there are people who say, you know, I got better things to do. I have so many interests. Why do I have to do this? This is like the lowest on my priority of things to do.
Yeah, and back in the day, they used to say because there's no entertainment, and then the lights go out at a certain time because you know electricity and all that. So why people have a lot more babies then?
Yeah, right? So this is why I think a lot of Singaporeans, they love going on staycation or like vacation. Now that COVID has opened up, you know, all the travel doors. But I think what happens is intentionality is very important, because depending on why you're traveling for, like a lot of people then go on like eating and a lot of adventures, and then they get so tired, then they don't end up having sex anyway.
Yes. I've actually heard of a friend who had trouble conceiving until they traveled. That was years ago. Until they traveled to an exotic place, and they successfully conceived.
Yes. So we need inspiration, because we are just busy going through the humdrum of life. We fall into a pattern, and we just let time go by. And a lot of us are actually not happy. Yeah. So it's really important to shake things up and to do things differently. Yeah. Even if you're, you know, in the same place, you can still be creative around it.
Since it's International Women's Day, I really want to talk about our bodies and how we can better take care of it. One of the things is like the vulva care and vagina care. I mean, are we taking care of it?
I think
well
a lot,
enough.
Yeah, I think a lot of people never really even look at their genitals. Their partner actually knows their body better than them. So even taking a mirror, looking at it is very important, because there could be things that were change. Like for instance, like ingrown hair or wart will appear or pimple and things like that. If you don't know that it's not there usually, then you wouldn't know that it's not supposed to be there. Mm. As we get older, our skin does become more lax and because of the estrogen. And so there are people who will develop like dryness and itchiness. Mm. I never thought that would happen to me, but yes, it's starting to happen. Mm. So there are people who believe in having a vulva facial. They put a mask on it. Previously, I thought it's like commercialization, but in reality, you know, we moisturize our face all the time. Why are we not moisturizing this delicate part of our body that actually starts to feel dry and itchy? So it's really important to use organic natural products as best as possible. And a lot of people don't actually look at their daily discharge, you know, in their panties, because the smell, the discharge looks different every day. So that's a way to gauge your sexual health. Whether I have developed like yeast infection, there's like this cottage cheese kind of look, or like it's super greenish, or it's super smelly. These are all signs that something has gone on. Yeah. So I used to have this tendency of eating a lot of cakes and sugar. And that actually causes yeast infection even when I'm not sexual. So a lot of people think yeast infection is because of sex. But in reality, even something like sugar can actually disrupt your very sensitive body, and that can affect your discharge.
What is the healthy color or smell, if that's the way?
So everybody discharge. Smells differently, and every day actually feels different depending on when you are towards your ovulation, your cycle. And so it's really important to know this, because the more you notice what's happening inside your body, then you know, okay, my period is coming, or okay, I want to slow down, or I'm ovulating, that's why I'm feeling this way, bloated, tired. So that will help us to, if we can track it, then we can also plan our day around it. So that instead of working against our body, we are working with our body, or working with our energy level. So then life doesn't have to be tiring.
I'm so happy you're saying this, Dr. Lee, because... you know, I think it's only recently that I've come to realize that, hey, you know, everything is in a cycle, right?
Yes.
Like we have the lunar cycle, right? And you've got high tide and you've got low tide. Yes. And so do we. We've got our cycles.
Yes.
And you know, sometimes when we are menstruating, we are tired, we have low energy, and we don't really feel like moving. And rightfully so, because you know, we are losing blood.
We're in hibernation.
But because of the reality of life, right? We have to work,
we have
to push. And then we end up harming our bodies a lot more.
Yes, and then we are exhausted.
And then in fact, we complain about this. We feel that,
yes,
like, ah, damn it, it's that time of the month. Then
like we are angry with our bodies, but in reality, our body is doing its best to support us.
Yes, and then I used to feel that way also. You know, it's so troublesome. Oh gosh, I got to wear a pad, I got this. Oh, I can't go swimming. You know, I'm so worried that I'll stain my pants and this and that. And then it's like, you know, you always feel negative every time the period comes. And some people, they get bad cramps, they get headaches, they get this and that, right? And then after a while, I realized that, hey, this is not good, because, you know, I only have a few, maybe I don't know how many more years, you know, I think rightfully like at least a decade more before I start, for this to end, before menopause hits, right? Shouldn't I be enjoying it now? Mm. Like, shouldn't I make the best of it, right? Yeah. And if my body is telling me that, hey, I need to rest, why am I not listening to it? Why am I not resting? Who is actually forcing me to work hard, right? A lot of times it's us. We're giving ourselves that pressure. Of course, you know, many of us, we have to work. We have a lot of commitments that we need to fulfill. But, you know, I love the fact that you're pointing this out, that if we're aware, then we could also give ourselves a little bit of leeway.
We can do better. You know, instead of what we are doing, maybe there are ways that we can do better so that we don't hate life or hate ourselves so much.
And blame ourselves for having it. And also, I guess it could also be back in the day, you know, how sometimes like you get blamed, like, you know, her temper is really bad today. I think it's PMS. PMS.
Yeah.
Right? You get made fun of.
People make fun of that, and it's really not nice.
Yeah. And I think it's not a positive thing. And I really want to be able to turn this into a positive thing, because hey, we're the only gender who can do this, right?
I think we also parent ourselves the way our parents parent us. And so we can continue to do a lot of harm to ourselves long after we have passed our puberty. And so it's really important to ask ourselves whether there's a more compassionate way to be. Because it's essentially all this self-blame and this pushing and pushing. After a while, your mind and or your body actually starts to really say enough and shut down. And then you might reach a state of paralysis, you know, like not moving, not doing anything. And so the self-compassion is the way to go.
Is it okay to have sex when you have your period?
Yeah, it's okay. I like having sex during my period. Maybe a bit of TMI. because when you have the menstrual blood, actually it's actually a form of lubricant in not the way it looks, but it actually is more lubricated. And when you are actually menstruating, your body is actually more open and dilated to allow for the menstrual blood to flow. So actually you are more open in terms of your vagina. And unfortunately, a lot of people see it as dirty. In reality, it's healthy. It's healthy.
It doesn't.
It's full of nutrients and everything.
It doesn't like cause infection in your part. I mean, your partners won't.
Yes,
catch
of course.
Like
if any unprotected sex can lead to an exchange and a gateway of STIs and bacterial transfer, yes. But if you're in a monogamous relationship, okay. If you're in a monogamous relationship.
How else can we, you know, women take care of our sexual health?
Besides our down there and then also up there. How about our breasts?
Wait, before we go to the breasts, you talked about the facial that we do and then of course monitoring the discharge. Is there anything else that any other ways we can take care of?
Oh, yeah. For people who are sexually active, they recommend at least once a year. Like, you know, my mom had breast cancer, and so from a very young age I was told to go for annual pap smear. I started going when I was in my 20s. Yes.
And that's,
catch it early, right?
Yeah. And I think there was also an episode last season where we talked about the HPV vaccine that we can actually take actually once our daughters, if they are of that puberty age, that they should take the vaccine.
Yes. And boys too.
Yeah, and boys as well, of course.
So when the vaccine first came out, I was one of the... I went and got it immediately because I was actually very active. And recently I found out that my friend had a HPV scare, and she didn't know that regardless of how old she was, she can go and get the vaccine. It's just something so simple. Like, you know, just because you're past a certain age, the recommended age, some protection is better than no protection.
So, okay, so we're done with how to take care of ourselves down there. Now we move up, right? How do we take care of ourselves up there?
Touch yourself regularly. Get to know your breasts. Get to know how your body feels.
But touching yourself and when someone touches you is different, no?
Yes, of course it's different. Touching yourself doesn't have to always be about masturbation. It can be just to... kind of like give like nurturing touch to yourself and to like check everything is where it's supposed to be and what it's supposed to feel, including any like lumps. So for breast check, they always recommend like try to remember it, like do it the same time every month. So there's a certain kind of benchmarker in terms of the consistency, like, okay, this is how it feels. Because different time of the month, your breast can be like more firm and so on. I think it's important. Like when my mom first found out that she had a lump on her breast, it was my father who told her, right? How like, you know, this is your body. Why is it like you didn't touch yourself? You know, you shower every day. So what are you doing? You know.
Okay. So any other things that you can do? Like, I mean, massage. Like, I do think it's important to massage it, moisturize it.
I mean, sun it.
Huh?
Sun it. Sunbathing. Sunbathe your, you know, our poor, okay, going back down there, our genitals don't, you know, always stuck in the underwear. And, you know, even your underwear, actually cotton underwear, breathable. Yeah. Otherwise, there's perspiration. And this is also another reason why people are prone to UTI, because the bacteria is just growing. Yeah.
So actually, it's better off if we are not wearing any underwear, right?
Yes, there are people who... I have a friend who doesn't wear any underwear, and the reason is because don't wear breathe better and actually healthier. Then I have friends who actually sunbathe their vulvas. Sunbathing.
Then do you need to put sunblock? Just so it doesn't get burned?
Yeah, I think the point of the sunbathing is the fact that it's always covered anyway. Yeah. So give it some sun.
Okay. Yeah. Okay.
So can't do it in public in Singapore, by the way. It's an offense.
You can do it in your... Can you do it in your own house? Like if you've got like a balcony or...
Yeah, but if you have a neighbor with binoculars...
Then that's tough, huh? That
yeah, really so I think this is why a lot of people do a lot of other things outside of Singapore.
Now you've given me something to think about. I've never thought about going to a new beach.
Yeah, it's fun. And
maybe, yeah.
Even like having outdoor sex or outdoor shower, it's just
isn't
nice.
It illegal here to have?
Go outdoors overseas.
Oh, overseas.
Yeah.
Let me put that on record that it's an offense in Singapore to have sex outdoors.
Yes, and to expose yourself outdoors and to masturbate outdoors. Mm. Basically do anything sexual outdoors.
Regardless if you're consenting partners.
Yeah. Yeah.
So this is for the record.
Yeah, I mean, regardless of what it is, you need to be aware of the law and just... If you want to break the law, then you have to bear with the consequences.
Mm, okay, so those are the different... I mean, I don't know if this is a myth, but not wearing any underwear would make you catch infections easier. Is that a myth? Or is it a fact?
I think it's a myth.
It's a myth?
Because the underwear actually can be problematic because of... Like I mentioned, there's a lot of material that actually doesn't allow for breathing. So then the moisture, the bacteria will actually grow. Yeah.
Mm. So with hair or without hair, is there any difference?
I think a lot of people think it's clean, it's proper. But in reality, when you remove the hair, it actually can cause other complications like ingrown hair. And the hair, the pubic hair actually exists as a cushion and as a barrier for bacteria.
Mm.
So it's a personal choice, you know, they want to remove, just like cosmetic surgery. A lot of times people choose to do things to themselves. Yeah, it's important that they feel good about themselves.
Mm. Does taking birth control affect our vaginas or sexual health in any way?
Well, it's a well-known fact that birth control can affect our sex drive.
Mm.
And it can affect even, because it affects your hormones, it even affects the kind of person that you are attracted to.
What do you mean?
It affects you. It affects the way you feel. It affects the way you think. It affects the kind of people you're attracted to. Yeah.
Okay. In what way?
It affects your hormones.
Okay.
Does it make sense?
So it's not specifically like it would make you be attracted to the wrong kind of people. It's just differs for different people. Is that what you mean?
Because you are taking something that's repressing your body.
Mm.
So when you're off it, you feel completely different. Mm. So the person that you are originally attracted to may also
turn out not to be the one.
Yeah,
that you
may
are
also
attracted.
Like something might change. Yeah. Because yeah, when I was, I took the period pill for many years. I did it to control my acne. And when I got off the pill, all my acne problems came back with a vengeance.
Wow.
It didn't control it. It just suppressed it. And it just all had to come up. There was no ways to siam it, basically.
I mean, this is very common, I think. I'm not sure now, but during my time as well, like, you know, we have acne and we're always told like, hey, you know, taking birth control pills can help.
Yeah, so that is the Western way. But I think the organic community natural way is, why do you want to do that?
Mm.
It's so harmful.
Mm.
So it took me a long time to actually stabilize my skin condition.
Mm.
I had a lot of bullying when I was growing up. Mm. I had cystic acne on my face. I was plump. I had like really ugly poodle hair. My mom thought it would be cool, but I looked like a little poodle. So I was called the ugliest girl in school. Mm. I was bullied. And so people look at me and they said, what do you know about body image? Oh, I know.
I see. This is, I feel like we can go into another area of discussion completely. But let me go into this part about building intimacy with your partner. Like, you know, you did mention a lot of us, we're not having enough sex and, you know, we have all these reasons, right? It could also be the dysfunctions, the sexual dysfunctions that some people might have. But it will also just be the fact that, we're not making time. Mm. Right. So do you have any tips for couples on how to build intimacy?
So the funny thing is, I do have clients who say, but we spend all our time together. And I said, yeah, then you have work time and then you have all your other time called downtime. So downtime is not quality time. Because if you just noir and you are not really conscious about the actual time, you didn't put in effort because you're tired. And so you watch TV and then you call it couple time. I think that's a cop-out. A lot of people just keep doing the same things and they are totally uninspired. So it does take a little bit of effort to plan, to block out, to have a little bit of intentionality. And a lot of couples resist the whole idea of blocking out time for sex because they think, oh no, it's supposed to be spontaneous. It's not passionate. But in reality, we are talking about the pressures of life and how busy we are. If we don't prioritize something, it's less likely to happen. So how can we make it such that, besides blocking out the time, how can we make it an experience that feels like a little cocoon, a little like coming back to each other? How can we make it special? How can we turn it into something that we look forward to? How can we try something new? It's just not going to pop up, you know, this new prop. It's just not going to show up if you didn't order it.
Oh.
Or take it props. Out of the box or...
Let's talk about this prop that you just popped into this conversation. If you don't order it, okay, what's this prop that you're talking about?
I mean, you can order sex toys, but I mean, one of my favorite is blindfolds. Yeah.
Oh, tell us.
I love blindfolds. So because you know the
how does that work? Tell me.
Yeah, because sensory deprivation, right? Mm. And it will heighten all your other senses when you can't see, so they can focus on your voice. And in fact, a lot of people are very self-conscious when they're trying something new and their partner is looking at them or judging them, or like they feel very scared if they're like trying something new, like a new technique. People who are new to sex, they can feel very intimidated, their partner looking at them all the time. So yeah, see, close your eyes or wear blindfolds. Yeah. And okay, just don't focus on how I look, just focus on what I'm doing and how you feel.
Right.
So that was actually something that helped me with my own insecurities and nervousness around sex.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah, like for instance, it can feel very overwhelming that, hey, I'm trying to touch you, then you're trying to touch me, then I don't know what I'm supposed to feel. It can be a sensory overload for some people. So being able to break it down into smaller steps, like, okay, now I touch you, okay, now you touch me. We take turns, okay, don't confuse. Now I focus on what I'm feeling. Because the way you feel when you touch yourself is different from the way you feel when your partner touches you. It can be overwhelming.
Why do you make it sound so... technical, like,
yeah, because
you wait. I touch first, yeah. And then you wait.
It can be overwhelming. It can also be scary for people new to sex. You know, yeah, I want to play with you, I want to touch you, but I'm afraid that you're going to lose control and rape me. So like, okay, you know, like having like certain safety, right?
So you mean? Do you mean setting boundaries?
Yeah, boundaries. A lot of people just because I guess we don't get the modeling. First of all, this whole can of worms about the lack of sex education, and then the fact that we don't actually see this modeling in TV or movies. We don't see that. We just see people groping people, throw them against the wall, and everything seems to work. So there are people who actually, you know, don't really know how to talk about it, and don't spring surprises on your partner. It's not going to go down well because they are not on the program.
Wait, tell me about this modeling. What do you mean by modeling?
Meaning you see how someone do it and then you try it. We don't see it,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, I was just about to ask you, like, where do you go learn techniques, for example? Or know what are some of the new things that you can do? What are some of the tricks that you can try?
Yes.
But where do you go to learn all these?
Come to me. Come to me, I teach. Oh. I teach hand job, blow job, penis massage, vulva massage. I teach it.
Oh, I see.
I do teach it.
Yeah, because it's true. I mean, what I'm saying is true, because honestly, even you talk about TV. I've also actually met someone who said that she's an intimacy she's on a course to be an intimacy coordinator.
Yeah.
And we know that we have this person on set for shows like Bridgerton, for example, where there's a lot of sex scenes. But we don't have that here in Singapore. And in fact, I brought this up to my executive producer just recently, and she's like, who's that? Like, we don't know of this person. What does this person do? And I realized that, hey, you know, actually a lot of what we do, even here on local TV, I personally feel that it's not realistic enough. At least we watch the shows that are on the streaming platforms. You feel like, okay, that at least it's believable. But over here, I do think that there's a lot more that we can do with that. But of course, the ratings could be one of the concerns that we have.
Yes.
But it's true, right? Because we tend to learn from what we see.
Yes.
And so the other thing that I wanted to ask you is also the fact that when we see this idealized version of sex on TV or...
Yes, it gives people a lot of pressure.
Yeah, or even some, on pornography even, right? There's this certain idealized version of what it's supposed to look like or at least they think it feels like, right, from the show. Doesn't that affect...
Yes, it can create anxiety, it can create unrealistic expectations, pressure, and people actually take entertainment as reality.
Mm.
So there are actually porn that is amateur porn by real people. Then there are real people who are in loving relationships, making videos of themselves showing how it's like in a consenting relationship, like taking breaks between sex or having a drink of water. Like, I think we're really moving away from all these unrealistic depictions, because so many of my clients who identify as women, they really hate porn for that reason. Like, it's targeted for the male gaze and it doesn't make them feel good. It makes them feel sexualized and objectified.
Mm.
So if this is not working, then finding a better way.
Mm. I mean, I've also heard of some sites where it's actually porn for women. So it's not so much from the male perspective. But then there's also a part of women who wish that their partners would be aware, isn't it? Because their partners also could be used to, you know, what the male gaze is like.
Yes.
So how do you think couples can bridge these communications? Even just now earlier we mentioned, right? Like, if you want to try something new, but maybe your partner is like, hey, it should be so spontaneous. Yeah, yeah. And then one person wants to like, hey, don't do this kind of funny thing.
So a lot of my clients ask me how to say.
Yeah.
As if they really missing the actual script. So being able to teach sexual communication is a big piece, and consent. I have had people who said, huh, you mean every single time I touch my partner, I must ask? Oh, that's going to take away the romance.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not sure, because if you touch someone who is not mentally prepared, then how can they truly be open to receiving? If every time is a yes, if they're always supposed to say yes, then when will you ever trust their no?
Mm.
So it's really important to talk about this. So this is where the lack of sexuality education comes in. I do teach this in my workshop. I try to do my best with couples that come to see me and in my workshops. Yeah.
Can you give like one or two tips on, for example, like how to communicate or what can you actually say?
Yeah, I was very, very fortunate that my first... sexual partner, my fiance at that time, when we want to make out at the start of the session, we would talk about, okay, today we are going to do this, we have this amount of time, and if we can accomplish this, that would be a great session, and since we want to go and eat, we have half an hour. So we'll talk about it before a little bit. It'll be like a less than 5 minutes conversation. Every single time we have intimacy, he will talk a little bit about it.
But like, that's also because you're receptive to it.
Yes, but I didn't know better, right? And he was just my first partner.
Right.
But I didn't realize that nobody I know actually had that.
Yeah.
So first talk about it, and then during you may or may not talk a lot. It's kind of like going into the unknown. And then afterwards, you can talk about it. Like, how was it? What was good about it? What did you like? What didn't you like? How can we improve it? What would you like to try the next time? And then the next time comes and like, hey, remember the last time we talked about this? Should we try it today? Would you be open to it? Like these, like simple things, you know, not taking things for granted.
It's, you know, when I'm hearing this, I love how normal it is. You're normalizing the conversation, just like how, did you like that dress that I bought you? Or did you like this?
Yeah, ask for feedback.
It's as normal as that. But
yeah, it's normal.
For some reason, exactly. But it's not normal for a lot of us.
Yes, because we didn't get the modeling.
Yeah.
We didn't get the modeling. We don't see it on TVs. We just see people groping other person and the other person always liking it.
And I'm
Even people who didn't like it seem to like it later.
And I'm sure that there will also be a situation where one partner is like, why are you talking about this? Right? So
yes,
when that happens...
Because they didn't, you know, they don't get onto the plan as well, which is, it's actually all about safety and respect.
And this is important because, as you mentioned earlier, that if I'm not ready to receive and you are just coming on,
yes,
then obviously it's not going to end well.
Yeah, it's just like you throw someone a birthday party and then they hate it and you didn't get the response you wanted because you didn't even ask whether they like surprises or, you know,
right.
You just go and do what you want to do anyway.
But if they like surprises, then it's great.
Yeah,
it's fine.
Correct. So you need to see your audience.
You need to have this common language when it comes to sex. And so how can couples start?
Yeah, because we don't have it in the first place.
What do you mean? We don't have what?
Don't have lah. Like nobody talks about it. Nobody knows. So this is where people like me talk about it all
okay,
the time.
Okay. So one tip, like how can couples start this conversation even?
Just start by maybe talking about sex when they're not having sex. Nowhere near sex. Maybe like not even anywhere near the house. Maybe like outside.
Mm-hmm.
Like, hey, you know, I have a question to ask you. It sounds maybe a bit funny, but what do you think about our sex life? Is there anything you always wanted to try? Do you think we can improve it? Or I'm not asking because, you know, there's anything wrong about it. I'm asking because I care about you and I just want to make sure everything is okay with us.
Okay.
I want to do better for you. Yeah, coming from a place of love.
When you want to have a conversation like that, what can go wrong?
The first thing is they think that something's wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Then they think you're about to launch an attack on them. Mm. So they are quite defensive. But so the tone and it's very important, like keeping it light and talking about these things, but in a way almost like you don't care, like quite detached about it.
Mm.
Yeah. And to not give up. So I noticed the first time I asked, yes, they will be very wary. Second time I asked, a bit less wary. Third time, a bit less wary. Fourth time, wow, before I even asked, they tell me already. Yeah. So every time after sex, I was like, how was it? So they know every time this woman will ask, how was it? So the fourth time, the fifth time, before I open my mouth, hey, you know what, just now, huh? I'm like, wow, okay, talk more than me now, good.
Okay.
So it's not true that you have to be a coach in order to influence change in a relationship.
But you see, even for you, you also have to be able to receive the feedback in a positive way.
Yes.
Right?
So because you have to brace yourself.
Right? Imagine you ask for feedback and then you realize that, hey, you didn't
It's not what you wanted to hear.
Yeah, it's not what you
it's
wanted
too
to hear.
Much.
Yeah, like, you know, your intent of it, obviously, because you love someone, you want to pleasure that person. Yes. But then it turns out that actually you didn't pleasure.
Yeah, so you have to brace yourself, you know, it's difficult, you know, to hear things you don't want to hear and can be hurtful, but you have to be prepared, lah. You want to ask, then something like you dare to ask, then you be prepared for the answer. So we have to do an amount of self-assurance, we have to do some preparedness, then we have to do some self-soothing if needed, but focus on the big picture, which is the longer term health of the relationship.
How do you cope with it then? Like, for example, when you receive like an answer that you don't want to hear, how do you, you know, improve it, for example, or even
so
get
a lot of times we have this tendency to react because we don't like what we hear and we get defensive, we want to attack them. But it's really important to realize that the reason why I'm asking is because I want to improve things on the long term. So if in the short term, I'm hearing things that I don't like and I improve it, then if it gets better, then of course it all pays off hearing this thing that I didn't want to hear in the first place. So having some kind of a resilience within ourselves and to basically not take it personal. Just because they don't like something doesn't mean that I'm bad, I'm wrong. It's just that they don't like it. I've had people shame me like, hey, you know, this work on all the other girls that I've been with. How come it doesn't work with you? I'm not all the other girls who are, right? Mm. So it's the same thing. If you really want to know my truth, then you have to be prepared for my answer.
Mm. I see. But then what I'm hearing is also that even if they are not ready to hear the truth, somehow you should still communicate, right?
Yeah, be gentle about it, yeah. Of course.
Because otherwise, you know, how are you going to have a long, you know, healthy...
Like get closer, because we did not see this being done in movies. We did not see this in our parents. We didn't get any education. But we want things to be better. So practicing talking about sex, just a little bit, and then gradually getting better at it. Nothing comes immediately.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I was very fortunate that my first partner was already communicating with me intentionality and boundaries from the start. So later on, when I had other partners, I thought it was just weird that they didn't talk about these things. So then I bring it out and I realized that I don't have to just be a, you know, victim and just like let things be done to me without like knowing what, you know, so that I will ask that, okay, before we continue, what are some things that you don't like? What are some things that you don't want me to do? Can I tell you what are some of the things that I don't like? Can I tell you some of the things that I like? Then all of us are more on the same page, right?
Oh, this is a good tip.
Yeah. I don't want to hurt them and I don't want them to hurt me. Like, for instance, oh, I'm very ticklish, or please don't leave any love bites or whatever. Yeah. Don't pull my hair. Don't spit on me.
Like, yeah. We would never thought of talking in this way.
Okay, you can come on my face, but not my eye. Okay. It has happened. Then the guy, how can I not come in your eye? Okay, never mind. I wear my glasses.
You're right. So now I understand what you mean by these are the things that you don't hear about on TV. Because
then things will just happen and you're like,
things on TV just
why
happen.
Did you do that?
I see. Okay,
how can you blame them when you didn't tell them don't do it?
Yes, indeed. What about married couples, for example? I mean, what I'm hearing is like, if you're...
Okay, married couples, because they love their partner, they want to hurt them. So guess what? They just keep doing the same thing again and again and again until they are super bored. Just because you do the same thing for 30 years doesn't mean you have a good sex life. It means you are just in a settled sexual pattern.
Yeah, so how can married couples, especially if they've been married for a very long time, break out of this monotony and continue to have sex like, I don't know, is it even possible to continue to have sex like they did for the first time?
So this is the reason why we need to look at things with fresh lenses, you know, just like us, you know, like being doing the same thing for so long, we have to keep looking at it in different ways because we get bored, right? Mm. So same. So in a lot of relationships, there will always be one person who likes more variety than the other. So when you have someone who's very, very routine, they really, really perfectly okay and they don't want to evolve, and then the other person is bought out of their, you know, skin. And so it's really important to be gentle with the other person and to express your needs, your desire, and to assure them nothing is wrong. It's just that you would like to try something new. So when you want to try something new, don't jump off the cliff, just like one small step.
And I suppose these are all the tips that you can learn. I mean, people can learn from you by coming to you.
Yeah, I mean, we have to be our own advocate for our happiness, lah. That's the bottom line. And some people are like, oh, I scared they're not happy. I scared they're angry. But what about the cost to you that you are not happy? Mm. You know, we always put ourselves less than other people. But in reality, if you are the other 50% of the relationship, then if you're happy, then they can see that you're happy. And this is the love that keeps giving. Mm. So when you model to your partner your vulnerability, your courage, then they will also in turn come towards you and say, hey, you know, you said that thing that day. I also want to share with you that thing, you know. So it's great. It's great because that's about like keeping it fresh, I feel.
Mm.
Courage. I think a lot of us just... don't know.
We just need to
become
courage.
Adults.
What do you mean become adults?
Boring. We just do very responsible things and totally uninspired. I mean, like work and the way Singapore is, I don't think it's very inspiring. We have to inspire ourselves. Yes.
Yeah, we do.
Yes. So I always tell my friends, I'm by myself a lot. I work for myself. I'm by myself with clients. But I spend a lot of alone time. And because I'm by myself all the time, then I need to entertain myself. So I do silly things by myself. I laugh at myself. I have a lot of toys in my office, and the toys in my office are not sex toys. They are really like toys. So I'll play with my toys and entertain myself, because if I am not yummy, juicy, vibrant, happy, how am I going to influence and support my clients? Above all else, I have to support and take care of myself first so that I can support them. And they actually look up to me as a role model, because they don't know anybody in their life, any Asian who actually loves sex. So when they see me, they're like, wow, wow, got people like you.
Yeah, I do think that, you know, we probably get a lot more references from the West, right, than we do Asian. So
so it's really important, because we always see all these Western faces and we say, oh yeah, that's the Western culture. We Asians are not like that. And that's sad, because it doesn't have to be a Western Asian thing. Can it just be a mother thing?
It's actually, I don't know, I just think it's quite primal, isn't it? All of us human beings, I mean, this is, it comes from that same place. Well, it's just culturally, I mean, the Asian culture is a little bit more conservative, and, you know, we don't openly talk about these topics. But, you know, that human need and desire, and in fact, what it does for us, you know, emotionally, mentally, physically, it's the same, isn't it? Whether you
I think regardless of your ethnicity. A lot of us are into like falling into line and being like in a community and conforming. And what I'm talking about, I think, is a lot of like finding your own identity and your individualism and your happiness, which you have to find your own inner compass and your own path. Like, you know, how I became a sexologist, I had a very long history of being the firstborn and needing to stand up for myself, taking the course that I want, putting on makeup, contact lenses, doing things as the firstborn that I have had to fight my whole life. So then when it came to finding something that I really, really, really love doing, then it just, I already had a long history. I already got the thick skin and the resilience.
So one of the things that I think we cannot neglect is understanding what are some of the sexual dysfunctions that both men and women face.
Yes. So for people with penises, I have started to simplify it and call it the three E's. So there's excitement. You need to be excited, aroused, and then you can have an erection. And after you have an erection, then it leads to the ejaculation. So at any point of this cycle, there are people who have difficulties with the arousal. They were aroused and then they lost their arousal. They have erection and then they cannot sustain their erection, or they don't have an erection. Then they maybe they have penetration, but they have difficulties with ejaculation. So whether it's ejaculation internally or externally. So I will work with them on all these, and I try to like keep it really simple. I teach them sexual exercises so they practice, it becomes a skill, and then in turn, hopefully it contributes to their sexual confidence. I feel that a lot of people, they wait too long because they don't know that there are people like me who actually teaches them ways to improve their sexuality, sexual skills without needing medicine. So they don't know where to go. So it's not that they know that there's an issue and medication is not helping, or medication is not the way for them. They know that, but they don't know who to go. So by the time they come to see me, a lot of times it's very late, like, oh, they had this issue for 2 years, for 5 years, for 10 years. So earlier is better than later. So maybe from the time it starts happening, 6 months, according to the DSM guide, once you have a difficulty for 6 months, then it is time to really go and get support. So it is useful to know better, like, your condition. So it'll be useful to keep a journal to know, like, when, where, what happened. Because a lot of people just, like, come in and, like, are quite a bit, like, vague. So the more details they have, the better, because sexologists like myself is like a private investigator. We're trying to find out the root cause, because yes, the issues are similar, but everybody's exact circumstances are all a little bit different.
But there's always like a cure. Is that what I'm hearing from you? That there will definitely be a solution to solve this problem.
Sometimes it's not as linear, like straightforward. It's like, this is it. It could be, okay, so you're telling me this. Okay, so let's try 1, 2, 3, 4. So you don't know which one, 1, 2, 3, 4 is the one that helps. And they can probably feel like, of, like 1, 2, 3, 4, maybe 3 help the most or things like that. Mm. You want to wait until like 1 and 2, you know. So it's like people are already like, you know, panic, like, you know, like in a bad state. So they just want to at that space of like trying different things. Yeah. So sometimes you don't know like which one is the one that really helped.
You mean sometimes they don't know which method is the most effective in solving their problem?
Yeah.
But
yeah,
there will always be a solution to solve their problem.
Yeah. Okay, it's just like people who are trying to get pregnant, they know, okay, sleep better, eat better, exercise more. But once they do this, they don't know which one contributed the most. Right. So yeah, so usually I will give them like a few suggestions of what they can try.
Okay.
Yeah.
So what about in women?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of times it's relational. A lot of times it's the pressure to please their partner. They find themselves doing things that they don't want to do. They don't know how to speak up. And when they do speak up, they try to speak up, they're being dismissed, undermined, they're being gaslighted. So many things. I think a lot of times they just want to just get along with their partner.
Mm. So for the women, I mean, it sounds like for the men, it's a bit more like physical in
yes,
that sense. Because
yeah, I always say
it's related to yes, their organ. But yes, for women, yes, it's yes, like a little bit more emotional.
They're very penis-centric. Sex, aka penis.
Yeah.
Penis don't work, no sex. But actually, they, you know, you can be sexual with your mouth, your fingers, with toy. Our whole body is a sexual organ. So why is this attachment with
sex being whole, only
yeah,
you
ejaculation,
know,
yeah, ejaculation, penis in vagina is, I think it's very much because of porn.
Mm.
Yeah, very like boring, you know, like one way sex, you know, today my turn, today your turn.
And what about the sexual dysfunctions in women?
Yeah, the biggest one I work with is vaginismus, when the vagina shuts down, making penetration difficult or important. So even answering simple questions like, where's the vagina? What's the orgasm? What is masturbation? Why is it important to be aroused? How to break things down into smaller steps so that it's not so overwhelming for them?
So what about women who don't know or can't reach an orgasm?
Yes. So a part of it is learning pleasure, different parts of the anatomy, and different techniques to masturbate, and understanding like what causes an orgasm, how an orgasm is more likely to happen. And a lot of times I notice that people are not giving themselves enough time to orgasm. It's like, oh, okay, 5 minutes, nothing working. Okay, I guess I'm broken. Yeah.
Mm.
So they don't really realize that actually statistically a lot of people need about 15 to 30 minutes of consistent stimulation before they can have an orgasm. So they do 5 minutes or 10 minutes and then they give up, or they get impatient with themselves, they get restless, they think they're wasting time. So it's very much linked to the whole masculine approach of like, you know, like get it over and done with, when in reality you just need to think of masturbation like a bath. You don't rush to a bath, right? You just put in so much water. You want to soak in it.
I've heard also, I think, because I mentioned about the last season, that people who can only reach orgasm. Okay, I should say this. For men, it's quite straightforward. Like, when they have an orgasm is when they ejaculate. Right? I mean, is this the right thing to say? When they have...
Yeah, for most people, yes. Orgasm and ejaculation to them is the same thing.
Okay. You mean it could be different?
Yes, there are people who can orgasm without ejaculation.
Okay.
It's just like people with vaginas, they have this, you know, squirting, but then they don't allow themselves to release that ejaculation.
So like for women, because, so for men, you know, when they ejaculate, it's like they reach orgasm, but for women, sometimes it's not so straightforward, right?
Yes.
And so what happens in a relationship whereby, say, the partners, I mean, either one, isn't able to achieve orgasm through penetration, but maybe they can through masturbation, but not through orgasm.
Yes. I mean, it's possible because...
Become a problem?
Yes. Only about 20 to 30% of people with vaginas can have orgasm through penetration. So most of it is external, like clitoral orgasm, 70 to 80%. Penetration, only about 10 to 20%. So this fixation about the penetration, for some people, is just not something that really is important to them, but it seems to be very important to their partner. So orgasm with penetration is very much about friction. So with external stimulation, it might be easier to manipulate, like with hands, with mouth, it might be easier. So some people have difficulties with the rhythm, the thrusting, the angle, and the lubrication. Yeah.
But there's nothing wrong, right? I guess we want to assure the listeners as well that because all of us achieve orgasm in a different way, we like different things.
Yes.
Just because you don't reach orgasm via penetration doesn't mean that there's anything wrong.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah, correct. I mean, it's just like we eat different kinds of food and we put all kinds of toppings on different kinds of food, and you decide to put a certain topping on a certain food that is different from other people. It doesn't make you weird. It's just your preference. Anyway, I don't know what's going with my analogy.
But I guess the intent is really to let people know that
pleasure, just have fun.
The way you enjoy could be very different from someone else.
I think we get very focused on being normal, and what normal means is just like doing what everybody else is doing.
But because we don't know what everybody else is doing, like we don't know what
correct.
Like our vulvas look, correct. Everybody's vulva look like.
So right? That's why there's this element of projection. So clients coming to me and telling me the impossible, like everybody else is doing this. I say, how do you know everybody else is doing this? Did you actually ask them? I assume... newly couples have like more sex than us. How do you know? Yeah, they assume.
Yes, indeed. So I guess the next question I would ask is, where can people find you if they need help?
Okay, so you can find me at my website, eroscoaching.com.
All right, thank you so much for being on the show and sharing all this knowledge with me. If you like this episode, please give us a 5-star review and remember to follow and subscribe to us on Spotify and Apple Podcasts. A video version of this podcast is available on YouTube, and you can also watch us on Spotify. I'll see you in the next episode. Bye!
This was the Zodapop podcast.